Remind you that he had finished his presentation before we went for lunch, and then proposal is therefore that we deal with disaster management.
It's critically important that this particular forum reports the cabinet on the coordination of disaster management, and it must advise and make recommendations to cabinet. What is crucial to take cognizance of on this particular slide is that, dependent on the category of disaster, we typically will gather a team of the relevant ministries, deal with the issues at hand, and then submit to the necessary cabinet or treasury committee processes. Moving on to slide 7, in respect of the technical forum that has been established in terms of the Disaster Management Act, this particular body is called the National Disaster Management Advisory Forum. It's headed by the Disaster Management Center. Consists of all national departments with a concern in disaster management, provincial departments, SALGA, as well as local government representatives. And then as to Section 5.1E of the legislation, there are a number of other stakeholders that we engage with. This committee was established during the course of the last year. It meets quarterly. And what is fundamentally important about this committee is it allows for integration of activities between relevant stakeholders across the three spheres of government. And it's a forum where we highlight and identify issues and then feed that through to the ICDM, obviously to get guidance on certain of the more sensitive type matters. This body is very active. We have detailed reports on activities and the outcomes of the meetings that we held last year. And we find that this is a particularly effective means of taking disaster management out of the silos and making it cross-functional. At this point, I'd just like to mention that we have had discussions in respect of officially launching these forums to the public. We have had discussions with our principals within the department, and within the current financial year, we'll have an official launch of the body of these particular fora, as well as the release of the disaster management annual report. Moving on to slide 8, the structure of the NDMC is important to note. That at the SMS level, we have one position that was advertised over the course of the last weekend. We don't necessarily believe that this structure is a blueprint for provincial and local municipal structures, given the fact that that would probably be more operationally biased, but certainly we've made progress during the course of the last financial year in terms of the structure. Moving on to slides 9 and 10, there's a lot of detail on these slides, but I think I just want to highlight some of the key aspects against our business plan for the 2006 and 7 financial year. The first, the effective management of the drought relief program, which we obviously administer in collaboration with the Department of Water, Affairs and Forestry. The working on fire program has been really one of the stellar performers in respect of our collaboration with DRAF once again, particularly this year, but the groundwork was laid before this financial year. I must mention that in terms of the capacity building constraints that we've got in the disaster risk management arena, that we've been working very closely with FRACWA. We completed the NQF Level 7 last year, and this is an area that obviously we focus on a lot more this year, and I'll come back to that. We have an honors program that we initiated during the course of the last financial year in collaboration with the University of the Free State, Science and Technology, Water Affairs and Forestry, and the CSIR. We have 10 postgraduate students specializing in disaster management that are full-time in the National Disaster Management Center, and obviously we are training them up and sharing them with other line function departments to try and build a capacity in this particular arena. With regard to the disaster management information system that the Act compels us to put in place, the live fire early warning system is in place and is actively utilized. We certainly found it a very useful tool during the course of the fires this year. We've also implemented the Project Portfolio Office, which is a tool that we've identified to track compliance with the legislation. Once again, one of the requirements of the legislation. Moving on to slide 10, I think what is significant here is that we've entered into an agreement with the Satellite Application Center to provide pre, during, and post-disaster satellite imagery for local municipalities, provinces, and other national government departments. We've done that obviously with a view to expediting the relatively long process in terms of bringing these processes to conclusion, and we find that the use of Earth observation satellite technology does speed the process up. Point N is obviously one of our particular focus areas. The coordination and support for Dome, Western Cape, Eastern Cape flooding, Northern Cape flooding, as well as the responses to the Northern Cape fault fires. We assisted Mozambique during the tropical cyclone. Obviously not just the National Center, that was a collaborative effort between the Defense Force, Department of Health, the police services, through the Department of Foreign Affairs. We assisted Burundi during the floods and subsequent food insecurity issues. And then once again, just emphasizing the working on fire support, as well as the coordination of Defense Force aerial support during disasters. Slide 11, I'm not going to talk to our CFO, we'll talk about it a little bit later. I'm just going to mention that we did spend the full budget that we had for the 2006-07 financial year. Moving on to slide 12. I'm just going to touch on, I guess, what I think are the key aspects on each page. 2010 preparations is a very large focus area for us. We've already prepared a guideline for contingency planning for the host cities. We actively participate in the host city security forum, chemical and biological task team, stadium design task team. It's a little bit sometimes beyond our mandate, but we believe that if we need to be prepared on the disaster management side, that we actively participate and identify areas that we need to collaborate with our colleagues from SAS, Health, and all the other line function departments. Fire services, a very big area of focus. We're in the process of rewriting the legislation. We've also appointed, or in the process of appointing, a deputy director to deal with fire services issues, particularly from a monitoring compliance perspective that we've identified as a need. Moving on to slide 13, the SACWA process. We've already got the NQF level 7 completed last year. We've now done levels 3 to 6. We're in the process of getting SACWA to take that through the process. And by the end of this financial year, we should have an EQQ in place to manage this particular program. Moving on to slide 14. I think really one of our large focus areas is this stakeholder relations role that we do play. We are in the process of finalizing MOUs with the following entities: the United Nations University, Rail Safety Regulator, Council for Geoscience, South African Weather Service, the South African Association of Consulting Engineers. All of these MOUs will be in place by the end of this financial year. Once again, to get all the institutional arrangements in place before disasters happen to ensure that we can effectively respond if required. Our role within the SADC region, there is a disaster management forum that has been established, and this is a particular area that we're trying to intervene to re-operationalize this particular system. The United Nations Disaster Assessment and Coordination Activities, the National Center sent two disaster management practitioners from provincial government on training. We've got five in the country now that can actively participate in United Nations if the UN requests assistance in respect of certain types of disasters, and this is a program that we will continue to do. Point 9 is very important considering the time of the year that we're in. We're establishing the Emergency Operations Committee. It's chaired by the Department of Foreign Affairs and consists of the Presidency, Health, Defense Force, and SAP, as well as the National Treasury. And this is to put the necessary institutional arrangements in place in the event that international support is requested, particularly during this period between November and February next year, which is typically when we are requested to assist. One of our key deliverables for this year is the annual report, as required by Section 24 of the Act, and that is something that we are in the process of finalizing. Chairperson, that was a very brief overview. I think it's difficult to report on the previous financial year without mentioning, of course, the fires that we've had this year that the forestry industry have indicated resulted in damage to the tune of about 3.5 billion rand. It's been a significant event. I think the Working on Fire program has been certainly praised very highly in terms of the over a billion rand that they've saved the country in terms of the interventions, and that is certainly becoming one of the case studies and a blueprint for other types of interventions that we are trying to identify. We must mention that we did submit Treasury Committee memos for all disasters that occurred during the course of the year. The storms and tidal surge incidents in KZN, funding has been approved for that. South African drought, just under 120 million rand has been approved for relief for the affected communities. The compound flood in the West Coast District, once again, that went into the system and was positively, we received positive feedback from the National Treasury. I think also I must mention that the National Centre and the role that the DPRG plays has been recognised by the United Nations International Strategy for Disaster Reduction Unit as the national platform for disaster risk reduction in line with the YOGA framework for action, and that obviously is significant to us. And I guess to just end off by saying that yes, there are many challenges. I didn't prepare a slide on that because typically those result in the parliamentary question, so we thought we'd just mention it verbally. But I think we must indicate that the funding for disaster risk management is fundamentally one of the key issues that we need to find a means of resolving. IDPs and the fact that disaster management in a fair proportion of them are not referenced, which means that it's never budgeted for, or funding is never ring-fenced for it. And then there are a few other issues with regard to the Fire Brigade Board that we're in the process of addressing as well. In conclusion, Chair, just to mention that we do have copies of the disaster management framework that are being distributed, or is in the fact for distribution. We have given members a copy of the Act. This is the framework, which is basically the implementation guidelines, as well as an information brochure on some of our activities in the National Centre, which is also in the back. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. William. May we then give this opportunity to Patel, please. Three basic services and infrastructure.
Thank you, Chairperson, honourable members, colleagues. The presentation really just follows a similar outline. The three basic services and infrastructure branch, the aim of the branch is really to address the infrastructure and service delivery needs of communities in a participatory and sustainable manner. There's a specific focus on supporting local governments to enable municipalities to deliver sustainable infrastructure, also to increase access to basic services as well as free basic services. Importantly as well, the program is aimed at enhancing public participation in governance and empowerment of communities. There's four sub-programs under the branch, the main or the largest sub-program being municipal infrastructure, the implementation of the management of the municipal infrastructure grant sits in the sub-program. There's a sub-program on three basic services coordination, municipal service partnerships, as well as public participation and empowerment. The next slide shows the sub-components of the grant. The staff complement indicating a focus on municipal infrastructure as well. In terms of achievement, the allocation for the municipal infrastructure grant for the 2005-06 financial year was all spent by February 2007. And largely there's been an improvement in the spending capacity with respect to municipal infrastructure. For the financial year that we're reporting for 2006-07, you can see out of the revised allocation of 5.938 billion, 97% of this was spent by the end of June 2007. That being the end of the municipal financial year. There's also been a large focus around deploying and supporting municipalities with technical and engineering projects and construction management capacity. And there's been a number of municipalities that have been directly supported through the unit. If you look at the next slide with the... With the
Your mic.
The trend is pointed to the fact that municipalities can absorb more funding. We put more funding into the infrastructure grant system. If we move on, some of the main achievements in the financial year have been the drafting and dissemination of a set of guidelines and accompanied by support programs, but mainly focusing importantly on municipal infrastructure and asset management as well. That is an increasing area of focus. There are challenges related to operations and maintenance, which is receiving attention. We also maybe just to highlight that the branch has been supporting the growth and development summits as well, from the perspective of the municipal service partnerships program as well. And there's a number of support given to municipalities with regard to drafting contracts and service level agreements. We've also, on the next slide, maybe I'll just highlight the progress with ward committees. In the reporting year, by March 2007, 80% of municipalities had established ward committees, and now, obviously, this is now improved in terms of basically covering all municipalities except the city of Cape Town. The community development worker program is also proceeding quite successfully. It's 2,100 community development workers that are employed in the public service. With respect to free basic services, access stood at 73% for indigent households having access to free basic water, and 60% of indigent households had access to free basic energy. And these are the figures, the water figures are basically figures that we get or reported on by Department of Water Affairs and Forestry. With respect to free basic energy, we basically liaise with ESCOM, as well as we have our own database in terms of the areas where municipalities are providing electricity. We also, there was a focus on the implementation guidelines for indigent implementation guidelines, basically. This was approved by MINMEC and currently it's been implemented. There was a rollout of the free basic services communication strategy as well during the financial year. And then with respect to the priorities for 2007 and 8, these are basically the outputs that we've included in the estimates of national expenditure, but I'll maybe just move on to the next slide and just expand on some of these priorities. I think with respect to the management of the municipal infrastructure grant, we've got fairly good capacity now in terms of monitoring the municipal infrastructure grant, as well as supporting municipalities to spend. And I think with respect to compliance with the Division of Revenue Act, that will be a key focus. We'll continue to focus on that. We're beginning to also build up the project management capacity in both provinces and municipalities to deal with infrastructure implementation. And I think the implementation of the asset management guidelines will be a key focus for which we're already currently rolling out in this financial year. One of the most important priorities for the branch is actually the bucket eradication program, and this is proceeding quite well. To date, we've over 173,000 bucket sanitation systems have been eradicated and have been replaced with functional and more decent sanitation, and this is impacting on close to a million families who are receiving better sanitation out of the program. We work closely with the Department of Water Affairs and Forestry on this program because we largely try to assist the municipalities to ensure that they have proper systems and are able to spend the money that's allocated to this program through the MIG grant. The program is also now accompanied by more comprehensive infrastructure planning to be able to ready ourselves for the remaining targets on water, sanitation, and electricity. We're also focusing on the municipal service partnership guidelines that have been rolled out, as well as the waste management model that's been rolled out to select municipalities. The next slide maybe will just point out some of the priorities with respect to improving public participation framework, as well as ensuring that municipalities and communities have a better way of communicating and having a better platform to deal with community development issues. There's a funding model that we're working on that we want to take to cabinet to look at ways of ensuring that ward committees can become more effective in the work that they're doing. We're also rolling out the implementation of the ward committee resource books, and we've also launched just a week or two ago the an NQF level 2 training program of ward committees. So we've done this in partnership with the local government CETA, as well as with some donor support. We do have a draft public participation framework already that's developed, and we're interacting with the white paper process and the review of local governments. So a lot of that work will feed into the review process. And I think the other priority as well is continuing to monitor and support the rollout of the free basic services and ensuring that through the infrastructure delivery process, we're able to extend access to free basic services. And then finally, the implementation of the indigent guidelines. And many municipalities have got indigent policies in place, and we're currently running workshops in all provinces, not just explaining the guidelines, but actually sitting down with municipalities and trying to work out appropriate strategies to deal with the extension of the free basic services and support the indigenous households. And the last slide is just indicating the budget, and obviously there is an increase with respect to the work of the branch. By the end of the MTS period, we should be having a budget of over 47 million to deal with our work. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Sister Tumi, are you ready?
Thanks, Chen. Thanks to honorable members. The presentation is in the text, so maybe we can proceed with the annexure after G. The purpose will briefly cover the purpose. The outline will briefly cover the purpose. Just a reminder on the chief directives in the branch, the summary of the branch performance, and the actual progress. The purpose of the MNE branch is to monitor performance, evaluate service delivery, and deepen the governance values and practices, in particular in local government. The chief directives under the branch are those listed there. I must just indicate that the fifth chief directory on internal origin has sent to the DG's office. This was the resolution of the audit committee that, in line with best practice, this unit should report directly to the accounting officer. In terms of the summary, the branch had planned 22 outputs for the 2006-2007 financial year, and we fully achieved 16 out of that. 5 were partially achieved, and we did not do that well in terms of one output. The actual performance achieved directorate, we developed the 2007-2012 strategic plan. It was published and distributed to Parliament on time. As part of that, we developed the business plan for this financial year. We could not finish the business plan on time. That is in March, but we have since finalized this work around May, and we are using it to review the performance of the department. The implementation of the 2006-2007 business plan was also monitored through the quarterly review meetings we held for last year. As part of that, we usually load information into what we call the strategic planning system. This system assists the department to package information that we use in the development of the annual report. We also developed the best practice project management framework, and we are currently in the process of implementing that framework throughout the department. The output on the monitoring of the 5-year local government strategic agenda, what we have done is that the forums were established in the offices. All provinces have established the monitoring and evaluation forum. They reside in the offices of the premiers. The premiers' offices have also established the units. We've got 8 offices that have established units. It's only Northern Cape that is still outstanding. In the provincial departments of local government, we've got 5 provinces who have also established their units, and there's 4 outstanding. We also developed the planning and reporting tools that provinces utilize to report progress on the implementation of the 5-year agenda. And we are able to also develop the draft monitoring, reporting, and evaluation framework that guides how monitoring work is undertaken throughout the department. And there's a document that informs how we are going to integrate all the current M&E systems in the department. With regard to corporate secretariat, the department held all its ex-cos as planned previously. The output that I indicated earlier on that we could not achieve was with regard to the development of a web-based system, which is really a document management and tracking system. We could not finalize that last year. The other output was the system is really to do with the ideas for like your PCC, the MINMEX, the government clusters, the department coordinates, the web of the DNA cluster in particular. And then other branches participate in other cluster work, the cabinet Lekgotla work, and the government program of action. With regard to legal services, the output was to improve mechanisms developed to allow for rapid responses to threats. To give effect to that, we developed the contract management system, which has since been implemented. The annual legislation program for 2007 was also developed and submitted to Parliament on time. With regard to the administration and promotion of access to information, we redrafted the manual which was republicized. We also developed a list of automatically available records in line with Section 15 of this Act. The legal unit also developed a service level agreement to enhance the work that they do. And then on the internal audit and risk management, all the planned audits for 2006-2007 were undertaken. Management provided comments. The audit committee also approved the internal audit plan for 2007 and 2008, and the status report that shows progress was presented to all the audit committees that were held last year. We also developed 4 reports with regard to risk management, tracking and progress, and in the beginning of this year, the risk assessment was conducted to determine how the department is responding to issues of risk, and that was made part of the overall planning process. This last night is just a summary of the budget. Like my colleagues did, I will not necessarily go deep into this because the CFO will cover this in his presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ladies. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Well, as we have agreed, we will now entertain questions and comments. We will start with Aero Africa presentation, and then Mr. William, and then this one, Tumi. I can see there's chair number one, Smith. Colin, should you raise your hand out? Up? No. Okay. Thank you. Those two.
Chairperson, my first question to Dr. Elroy. It's about, there is an annual service delivery knowledge information sharing that is run by GPSA. Now, one of the sessions which I attended dealt with local government. But in the previous ones, there has always been a significant absence of local government understanding. So as part of capacity building, consistent with the work you're doing with all departments, how well are we doing in terms of being present there to be able to provide that local government perspective in the discussions about a range of issues that get discussed there? It's a forum that brings together people from across the public sector and looks to me like an interesting platform not to miss, especially if you guys at a very senior level are able to provide that leadership. We complain about their insufficient understanding of local government, and I just wondered whether what your view is around that issue. This is what the first thing that I noted there in your. Just a quick one, Chairperson. The last slide in your priorities about the support to minister on the 2010 issues. In your evaluation of the risks that are attendant to the 2010 contract signed by cities, are you satisfied that the work that we are doing will mitigate whatever risks are in fact part of that? And what in fact is imagined there by way of challenges that might arise in that area? Thanks,
thank you very much.
Thank you for the couple of questions. Chair, on the Municipal Rates Act and the development there, I wonder if Elroy could just give us a one-minute synopsis of how the rollout's going. Because I mean, so many problems attend upon the lack of valuers and different problems that I'm sort of getting a sense of the same quo. Then the issue, then on the branch priorities, the first one is to strengthen national capacity to support provinces and municipalities to seek the delivery of national programs in local areas. And I just want to get clarity in my head. You are referring to things that are only within the ambit of local government, or is it national programs which are in local areas, but they may be provincial competences or other competences, for example, health, for example, or education. Is this referring specifically to areas of local government competence only, or is it broader than that? And if it is broader, then could, you know, tell us a little bit more about it. Then, he already made a big comment about this MLDT thing, and surely wanting you to find some individual, you know, ways of finding money. I know that the budget for the third next year, or what it is this year. Word on that. What's the solution? And then finally, share a couple of issues on capacity building. I mean, if I look at the headings of the whole branch here, it's speaking to capacity building. So capacity building is a key issue. And then we have what seems to be an anomaly. I mean, maybe I'm
misunderstanding, and that is, if you look at the budget breakdown for all these sub-programs, you can actually build systems with zero this year, zero next year, and suddenly it comes in with a huge amount of money, which is the second largest budget item of the lot. So I'm not even seeing something there. Perhaps you could explain why that is the case, because they're leaving about 1 billion on strategy building specifically. Is this strategy building framework, which has to do with what they're coming to expect then, and then the peer review story, and maybe a word of that as well. Thank you.
Very much. Honourable Professor.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just wanted to find out from Elroy with regard to slide number 7, program development and service delivery achievement, where he also indicated here that they've done a framework with regard to councillor remunerations. And I remember last time, some councillors were so very much confused with regard to this. So I just wanted to find out how far are they now? Have they tried to resolve those problems with regard to the different kinds of municipality, talking of the rural and the metros, there was a problem. So I'm not sure whether that was addressed. And another one, slide number 8, with regard to the implementation of anti-corruption strategy. It is indicated here that the implementation was only started in 30 municipalities. So I just want to find out as to whether is it now the number is increased or is it still at 30, and if the number is not increased, why? Thank you.
Sure.
Three quick ones. The support for presidential is in Bizo. Are we listening? What is the impact of, in other words, is there a quantifiable report of the results of interventions that arises after the imbizos happen? Is there any recorded way of tracking down our response to those things that emerge from those meetings? Secondly, what is the extent to which the gender framework, what is the uptake about, I would imagine that would be in the framework, a variety of gender-related work that we expect to see in municipalities. What is the quality of uptake there? Or are we only at a stage where we have launched the framework but not evaluated its implementation, even if perhaps others may have been ahead of the rest? What's the story there? And finally, the same would apply to the AIDS and as in the way in which you describe it. Can you just say a little more about that part of the work, the uptake and the practical implementation of those elements of that strategy of support you gave to municipalities?
Chair, can I just have one question? Just to ask, how far the second set of the regulations for the Property Rights Act?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. So, Colonel Shudul.
Just one question. On slide 17, the last point, the support for implementation of national youth service, is there any latest information we can access? Because I would believe that, some of us believe that this area rests with the deputy president. I just want more information.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So,
thank you, Chair. I think I should just say up front, I'm not going to be able to give some of the details that the members are asking. I'll give general responses. In respect to the first question, I think I have to just be quite frank and say that to the best of my knowledge, we have not been systematically participating in this initiative of DPSA, this very specific knowledge sharing initiative. We obviously interact with them in a range of other fora. One example that stands out is on the single public service where we've worked quite hard with them to get them to understand some of the implications of what they're saying for the single public service in the local government sphere and vice versa. But I'm just coming back to the very specific question to say that to the best of my knowledge, we've not been participating in that, and clearly next time we give feedback, that will be a different report that we'll give. In respect of 2010, this is a very difficult question that has been posed. I mean, I think the first point to make, obvious point to make, is that, you know, our department is not the lead department for 2010 matters. We really play a support role. On the one hand, Treasury, led by the Deputy Minister of Finance, convenes something called a technical coordinating committee, where in particular, our cities come and report on the kind of obligations in respect of the contracts that they've entered into, and in respect of the funding that they've been given. So I'm saying that that forum is one such forum. Obviously, our minister chairs a structure known as the Host Cities Forum, and that structure is also meant to exercise some kind of oversight role. But I think we mainly see it as a support structure where we are trying to identify challenges and some of these risks. I think it would be inappropriate at this stage to maybe get into some of the examples, but I can definitely say to the committee that there are some very difficult challenges in one or two municipalities as we're sitting here right now. And if there's a need for a specific report on that, we can clearly come to that. But let me just say one of the things where we think we are adding value as a department. We have gone out of our way to prepare something, and it's a bit of a misnomer, but we have gone out of our way to prepare something called a communication protocol. But in essence, that communication protocol is actually an IGR protocol to get the cities, the provinces, and national government to work in a cooperative manner to try and understand how we, together with the LOC, deal with some of the challenges that we are picking up in respect of the rollout of stadium construction amongst the other key priorities. Then coming to the municipal property rates act and the now, rollout.
Sorry, before you leave that one, you mean on the 2010 one, although the Honourable Minister says on 2010, there's no way that you can link with the 2010 and the municipalities on the question of minimizing the question of risk, the question that has been posed by the chairperson here. Yeah. I didn't understand you. I beg your pardon.
Okay, chairperson, then maybe let me try and rephrase what I was saying. Let me simplify that in two things. So the first point I was making is that this department is not the lead department when it comes to oversight and driving the implementation of the priorities with regard to 2010. That's the first point I'm making. So the flip side of that, the second point I'm saying, our department is very much playing a support role. So part of that support role involves our minister, obviously he sits on the LOC, there's this particular committee where ministers sit on, but besides that, our minister chairs a very specific structure known as the Host Cities Forum. And I was trying to say that forum, the way we understand that forum, is really an opportunity just for us to exercise our monitoring role, but really to try and see how we can provide intergovernmental solutions to some of the challenges that you're picking up. But you're really doing it working very close with Treasury, the DG of 2010. In fact, the DG of 2010 is someone that you work very, very closely with. So I'm trying to restate that. In respect of the Municipal Property Rights Act,
okay.
Yes?
Yeah, it's okay. Sorry, but I just the bell. I think members, someone must go and check downstairs. Then we may be called to vote.
Yeah.
So please just check. We can't not vote. We exercise every right of our vote here. Yep.
Thank you. thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. There was another question asked about the rollout of the Municipal Property Rates Act. This House will recall that, when we passed this Act in 2004, we said to the committee and to the country that this is a very complex piece of legislation. It's the first time that we've ever put such national legislation on the table, and therefore what it means, begin to roll out this piece of legislation incrementally. That's the approach that we've adopted. So part of that incremental approach has been, in the first instance, as I've reported already, we've prepared a first set of regulations in terms of some very basic things that need to be done in respect of undertaking valuation. And as we are sitting here, we already have, to answer the other member's question, Doman, we've already prepared a second draft set of regulations. So we're sitting with a draft right now that hopefully will be issuing still in this current financial year. Some of the challenges that we've picked up in the rollout include a challenge which some people have alerted us to some time ago, including this committee, the challenge around public service infrastructure. And again, this committee will recall in the bill that we just processed recently, we effected some minor amendments to try and minimize that particular challenge. I mean, and I can explain that later if there's a need. So again, in my presentation on slide 15, you can see that we can confidently report that only 23 municipalities have started in a very robust way beginning to roll out this particular legislation. But obviously, incrementally, many other municipalities are kind of at various other stages, but we are confident that 23 are kind of firmly walking down the path. But again, Chairperson, this is quite a complex area we can come in and give a separate report on. There was another question linked to the purpose of the branch, where it relates mainly to the competencies of local government. You know, when we work with national departments, and I think the short answer is yes. But I think there are a few other areas where we try and go beyond that mandate. But at the end of the day, we are really focusing on matters pertaining to kind of local government competence. Then there was a question asked with regard to the Municipal Leadership Development Program, issues around the challenges we're having with regard to the budget. I think, again, the short answer there is it continues to be an area of kind of challenge for us. Why it becomes even more complex now is that, you know, with SAMD reassessing their particular role and being the kind of, if you like, the kind of public sector's first choice when it comes to rolling out capacity building and training in the public sector as a whole, we're going to need to find that kind of alignment. So Chairperson, what I'm really saying is that while we remain committed to rolling out this program almost at a low intensity scale, if you like, and we think that there are kind of a number of positive things we're doing, I think there are a number of bigger questions that we still have not conclusively addressed in respect of resourcing, in respect of alignment with one or two other key initiatives. So that continues to be something that we must pay attention to. Then in respect of the budget, yes, it sounds like it's presented in a problematic way, but it's actually a very simple explanation. The budget for capacity building in the past sat with Project Consolidate. So in the future, that budget will revert back to capacity building. It's just a matter of kind of where we put the money. But the money for kind of capacity building has always been there. It's just that we played around with in terms of where we've located that money. And again, we can explain that in a little bit more detail. Councillor remuneration, yes, I think the member is absolutely correct. At least once a month in the department, you know, we deal with at least one or two queries with regard to people trying to understand, you know, what these upper limits are. We have had a few meetings with provinces, and I think we've had targeted meetings with a few municipalities, but we have done our best to try and clarify what we think we have put out in those upper limits that the minister has kind of issued. So on the one hand, the question was whether we've resolved these problems. On the one hand, we think we have done quite a lot in terms of trying to clarify the intention and the requirements in respect of that. But on the other hand, we know that there are, could still be problems on the ground. Local government anti-corruption rollout. Again, here, what I was reporting, Chairperson, is that different provinces have decided to roll this out differently. So we, again, we can confidently say to this committee that four provinces have decided to roll this out in a very structured manner. And obviously, you can give the names of those provinces. They've had provincial launches, and they have implementation plans, and so on. In addition to that, we have worked with, and I think the number we give you is about 30 municipalities where we've worked very closely with them in trying to roll out this. But this doesn't mean to say that the balance of the municipalities are not taking on board the kind of priorities and the requirements and the suggestions that we put in that local government anti-corruption strategy. But clearly, I think we need to come back with a much more comprehensive progress report. Izambizo, I'm tempted to defer this to my colleague, Ms. Mketi, but let me say this. After every single Izambizo, we prepare what we call an action plan of all issues raised and what needs to be done by who. And I think we can, again, fairly confidently say that most of those action plans, I'm saying most because I know the few recent ones we've had this year, I'm not sure we've completed those action plans. But for almost every single Izambizo, we have an action plan and we get reports against from provinces against those action plans. Now, I know about 18 months ago, or even the beginning of this year, you know, the kind of progress reports that we were getting were not indicating very successful feedback in respect of issues being resolved. But again, my colleague can maybe give the latest figures, whereby I think that number has increased quite dramatically in the last year, in terms of how provinces are reporting the resolution of very specific issues that have been raised in every single Izambizo. The short answer on the gender framework and the local government HIV and AIDS framework update, I think it's a little bit early days to report on that. We have not done a comprehensive monitoring exercise. So again, we will need to come back to more confidently talk about the extent to which municipalities are taking those frameworks on board. Let me just make a very important point here. We deliberately use the word framework. We are not putting policy instruments on the table. It's really meant to be a set of proposals, guidelines, suggestions in terms of how municipalities can mainstream matters of gender and also mainstream their response to the HIV and AIDS challenge that we have in this country. I've responded to the issue on the second regulation, and also to say on the National Youth Service, again, we see ourselves as supporting the presidency. We are in the early stages. We've only prepared a kind of a concept paper here, and again, you'll have to give us some time, Chairperson, to come back to report progress. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Did you deal with Comrade Futulu? Do you think? Can you say then we dispose of this then to the next presentation? William, any questions, comments? Yes, sir.
Just minor ones really. The slide 10 talks about provincial disaster management centers being established in all but one province, which is the one that hasn't done it. And good progress being made at district and metro level. Sort of, how far are you? Halfway through or what? And then the second thing, you made some comments. You said, you know, the society haven't put down challenges, including budget. And I was looking at budget, and it seems to be quite, 37 to 47 to 54 to 65 seems to be a pretty steep increase each year. What is the specific budget problem you're referring to?
Comment, Sloan.
I have two questions. The principal one is progress with the development of an effective system for our responsiveness. In other words, from the time resources are determined to them hitting the ground. What progress are we making in that area? I have no confirmation of this, but we hear that the Taung disaster, some of the resources that were meant to go there still haven't gone there. Is that true, or is there a different story? Explanation to why that is so. I'm citing that as an example of the question that I'm asking, that there are issues of the speed with which we respond. In some instances, some municipalities complain that the staff is left with them to deal with, and they don't have resources to handle that staff. So that responsiveness we share. The implementation of the act, when we did our visit to provinces, we noticed that after we'd been there, things began to happen that we were told this progress is underway, but until then we hadn't heard anything about it. Now, in other words, especially at the provincial level, are you satisfied with the quality of the work that's been put into place to implement the legislation, broadly speaking? In other words, just setting up is okay, you can report 100% compliance, but what is the quality of that implementation? This evaluative stuff, man, is what we really want to hear about. Because often we get told by when we do interact with municipalities and provinces of the shell, not the content of the shell. Okay, so just an indication of the quality of that implementation. Thanks, Dad.
Chair, I just want to know more about the fire brigade board. What is the progress there? What is the position? Thank you.
And lastly, for me, before I hand over to you for a response. Oh.
Thank you, Chairperson.
My sister there.
Yes. On the process of recruitment and training of the volunteers on the Waiting for Fire program, I would like to know whether there is any system in place for the employment of those people who have participated on the training and on that program, because we have seen the during oversight was our present portfolio committee. We have seen the volunteers volunteering there, and after they have got the training, they are not employable because they said that they do not have matric certificates. So I would like to know from the DPS, that are those people that they are trained, they are employable or not, basically.
Well, Sister Bing, can you come again? The chair is locked, but...
No. I want to come in.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, Chair, yes, come in.
No, I just wanted to ask on the host cities again. What are emerging as challenges to the issue of security? There are questions of security, okay? Then I want to know what is the extent to which the public sector security system, on the one hand, and the private sector, how is that being managed for this purpose? We may be headed for an intense issues around this matter. Going towards 2010, are there any issues arising from that issue, that matter?
Thank you, sir. Mine was just experience on IKS, Indigenous Knowledge Systems, as pertaining to the disaster management.
Mm-hmm.
All I wanted to hear. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I thought I'd start with the easy questions, but there weren't any, so I'll start at the beginning. There are a number of questions, but I think I'll just take it top down, and obviously where I can provide clarity, I'll do so. The first with regard to the disaster management center that has not been established, this is in the Northern Cape. This is probably the province that has experienced most of the capacity issues, and they've made us aware of it. They've had a problem with turnover. We have, however, been informed that the head of the Disaster Management Center has now been placed, as well as the fact that budget has been secured for the establishment of that center. The second question relates to progress at district and metropolitan municipalities. During the preparations for MINMEC, I think it was November 2006, we went through, it was also subsequent to a parliamentary question, did an audit of progress in terms of implementation of the Act down to the district and metropolitan municipal level. What that study, in short, indicated was that progress is being made. Is the progress satisfactory? Is it as quick as we would like it? Coming to the more qualitative issues, what sort of capacity are we talking about? Those are fairly difficult questions to answer, but we're in the process of finalizing our annual report now, and as part of that process, we've asked all these questions again with a view to also asking the local municipalities, districts and provinces, what are the challenges, and also what we're finding particularly challenging is that we ask people, have you established a disaster management center? And everybody says yes. When we do an audit, the center is a room with a desk and a PC and a telephone. Clearly that's not in line with the Act. So the first area that we're addressing as part of our annual report process is to ensure standardization, ensure that the question is that we send out a very clear, but what is critically important is that we have an independent audit, a team that will go out and do these assessments and come back and say, these are our ratings. And I think this is part of the process that we already engaged in. The budget issue that I raised, and I think I was being fairly swift, it certainly doesn't relate to our own budget, despite the fact that we think it's not enough, of course. The issue relates to the fact that in terms of the disaster management framework, there's a section that refers to the fact that national government should provide a start-up grant for establishment of centers, systems, and capacity. We have never, as national government, made that grant available. The National Treasury believes that that is part of the equitable share, and if local municipalities, districts deem it necessary to prioritize the disaster management function, they'll do so out of the equitable share. Very similar argument to the fire brigade services. Over and above that, the real issue that we find is problematic with budgets is that typically the only time that budgets flow is subsequent to the Treasury Committee process, which once again happens in October. The implication of that is that the window of opportunity to disperse with the funds is obviously short. It puts a lot of pressure on our MIG counterparts, where we now typically use the MIG grant as a mechanism to disperse with the funds, but it gives you 9 months within the current financial year to disperse with funds, which relate, for example, to disaster case events otherwise that happened in March. And it comes to the chairperson's question about how quickly are we responding, because it's all about that perception. Progress with effective system for responsiveness. Once again, there are two ways of interpreting the question. The one is, for example, if you log a call in the fire services, how quickly do we get the fire truck out and close the call? And we've just done an audit in the other cities as part of the work that we do for the fire brigade board. And the indications there are that in terms of, I think it's SANS 0090, that in most of the cities, most of those cities, the response isn't adequate at this point in time. I think the question really here related to the fact that Taung occurred April 2006. As the project being closed out, are we monitoring the effectiveness of our responses? And this is certainly an area that the department is concerned about. It relates a bit to the challenges on the budget side. If the budget cycle means that funding only comes to effectively in December, when the adjustment process draws to closure, it does give you a limited period of time, particularly with infrastructure projects where roads typically are affected, bridges. If the construction industry closes down in December, are these bits of infrastructure going to be rehabilitated on time? In the case of Taung, we took a submission to Cabinet. Cabinet approved the construction of 2,000 homes for people that were living in mud structures. My understanding was that an amount of 18 million was approved, which was subsequently divided by two because of the fact that there was a reprioritization process that took place. We are currently conducting an audit to see exactly where we are in the process. Part of our role is to solicit funding, but probably the most important part is to report back to Cabinet and Parliament in respect of the reconstruction and rehabilitation project. So we are sending a team out, and it relates to all the reconstruction and rehabilitation projects over the last 18 months, to effectively give us reports, have all the projects that have been identified for the funds that were requested have been completed, if not, why not? And we will be looking at that in a great amount of detail. Implementation of the Act, the progress at the provincial level, there was a question around the quality. I already touched on the fact that, for example, we're saying, are your centres fully functional? Do you have disaster management plans? Have you established your fora in terms of the legislation? Once again, we need to conduct an audit of, or somebody to at least evaluate the disaster management plans, because a lot of the plans that we've seen are not implementable, and there are a host of disaster management practitioners that have suddenly surfaced that are experts. And when you look at the outputs in terms of what they are producing, we're very concerned about the fact that they're not something that that is meaningful. The Fire Brigade Board, question in respect of that. For the last calendar year, we've had two Fire Brigade Board meetings. It's an area that we have identified where intervention is required, and it's an item that we're taking forward to the local government MINMEC. We've had a great amount of frustration with board participation. And this is of great concern because there are six or seven key issues that need resolution. And as is always the case, I think a lot of my function is to take away excuses for people not to do their work. And I think people have been using the fact that the board hasn't been meeting as frequently as we'd like it as an excuse not to do their work at a technical level. And obviously, we're trying to address that now. The third last question, volunteers for the Working on Fire program. We've identified this between ourselves and Water Affairs and Forestry, who obviously the volunteers are administered through DWAF. We have identified the fact that an exit path for the Working on Fire volunteers is problematic. They go through the training courses, we put them into the field for a period of time, but it gets to a point where they need to exit the Working on Fire program. We have discussed two alternatives. The first is to expand the Working on Fire program. We certainly feel that it's a best practice for dealing with interventions of this nature. So the first is that we, as I say, expanding the program. The second option that we're looking at is to create an exit path perhaps into structural firefighting for the Working on Fire firefighters. So effectively create overflow capacity for salt and forest fires to be able to assist the chief fire officer in the Western Gate fire season, for example. There is a third alternative, which is looking at expanding the program to provinces that don't currently have arrangements with Working on Fire, but discussions in that regard are fairly recent. I'll have to come back and report back there. The second last question, I'm going to just touch on the Indigenous Knowledge Systems. I've approached one of the universities to assist us with research in this regard. We've already, the research has taken place. Obviously, we are trying to find the link between Indigenous Knowledge Systems and the rest of our general disaster management mechanism. The research that we've already solicited from disaster management practitioners and academics in the field is certainly very interesting. And what we're working on right now is to package that as part of our annual report in terms of exposing that information and sharing that information. The last question on the host cities in respect of the security challenges, really the biggest security challenge is integration of activities. And if we look at the key role players here, we're dealing with police services, Department of Health, ourselves as disaster management. The key thing, and I think Alroy has mentioned already, is that this department didn't give any guarantees, and as a result of that, SAPS and ALSA did give guarantees, were given additional budgets, and as a result of that, they are leading the process. From our point of view, there are many security threats, not least of which some of the task teams that I mentioned in my presentation, but certainly the work that we have done with the police services and ALSA. There is a host city security forum that happens towards the end of November. The intention of that particular workshop will be to come up with an integrated plan dealing with security issues for 2010. I know that SAPS and ALSA, in collaboration with the local organizing committee, have earmarked, I think it's March 2008,
for the completion of the security plan, which is 3 months later schedule as per the requirements of FIFA. So there is a process underway. The areas that concern me are the grey areas in terms of where does one person's responsibility start and stop. And this is what this workshop at the end of November will resolve with all the role players present. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Follow up.
This committee that I joined late dealt with municipal policy. And that area of the boundary between SAPS and municipal policy is of particular concern because it speaks to many of the problems that might arise. So it would be useful to hear that there is work to resolve that conflict because it's an important one. The last point I want to make is that I believe that we would really, even if it's just the documentation, before your final report, if it is possible, to look at that indigenous knowledge stuff, so that when we do interact with you later, we have looked at it in advance. We would appreciate that. Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Couple up. Yes, sir.
Just one loaded one, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think we need to agree here that despite what the department has reported on, the report we adopted after our visit, maybe it should be revisited again. And I want to raise why certain things maybe will be done better here. You know, on our way, when we're in Kaun, for instance, we realized that if departments don't talk to one another, there's a problem. Houses were built, but there were no roads. And if you are there, now this takes me back to the report that you might get. That might reflect as if things are fine. The other one is about counting, where the center was in Nyakuruleni, but like representing national or provincial. And then the last one was here in Western Cape, here, whereby whilst the building, everything, everybody might seem to be busy. You see, the question of uniformity, people still use the old system of firefighting, the old way, not in terms of the new culture. I want to suggest that maybe in order to, because the things that we have touched on are the things that we have identified, some of them last year. Maybe you dedicate a month to a province where personally, nationally, is there to make sure that things are done. Because if you let them do it, they still maintain the status quo and try and so I'm saying in terms of details because we don't have time. In PE, there was a, what we raised, in what way do we just the disaster management get involved, for instance, in the planning of the, you know, the term you use. Which direction should the house face that is safer in the Eastern Cape? Then you know, there are those things, and such a person can put this. So I'm saying there is still a need, such a person maybe some stage, just to deal with disaster management. There is this committee in detail, so that we are then able to help the process take off the ground.
Yeah, thank you very much. 1 minute, Anne?
Thanks, Chair. I think that we certainly involved perhaps a follow-up visit of some kind, and I think certainly we were discussing it with Mr. Brown as well. Just very, very briefly, when we talk about security for 2010, we think of these concentric circles where the LSE is sitting right in the center, then you've got SAPS and you've got your community policing forum. And this is an area that specifically we need to address, and I think it will happen in this meeting in November, so I'll certainly provide feedback. Indigenous knowledge systems, we'll certainly also report back on that. We're in a bit of a catch-22 situation with establishment of disaster management centers and systems because on the one hand, the Act says that we should have a uniform integrated system. And it's, we tried to implement a solution of that nature. When we then went to the provinces to say this is the approach, they then said to us, give us budget. Because if you, it's like regulating. If you publish a regulation, in the absence of it, people don't do anything, but once it's there, they come to you to say national government now it needs to give us budget to comply with the regulations. So we do find ourselves in that catch-22, but we've identified it. What we've now focused on, if we can't have uniformity, we must have integration.
And this is now where we are shifting our focus to ensure that people still comply with the legislation timely. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, 2 minutes remaining. Are there any questions or clarity on my sister, Tony? Katie.
Monitoring
and evaluation.
You're jumping into. You don't know whether you're gender bias or something.
Oh, sorry, sorry. No. Yusuf, you cannot be lucky. No. Let me just engage the rest here. that with Chair Honorable Smith and Honorable Shutuli, that order.
Sufficiently is the extent to which the question of sustainability is addressed in the provision of those services. Sustainability in the sense of the Johannesburg Declaration, okay, environmental protection of the kind of stuff we do. For example, I don't understand why he needs Eskom kind of electricity when there's a possibility of an alternative which is more sustainable in his village. So that part of the work he does is to talk to his villagers that, look, there is an alternative system of energy provision which is more sustainable, rather than look for the Eskom card, meaning Eskom always plays a role in the provision of alternative energy systems as well. I'm just pointing out to that there are alternatives that we are not speaking to, that I'm not hearing. So as a department, we are as responsible as all the others to ensure sustainability as the World Sustainable Summit on stuff like that. So I want to hear that, whether it is factored in, I don't hear it at all, and why that is the reason. Why that is the case. My final point links to a question that I thought would be answered in Derek Powell's area of responsibility. The United Nations Center for Human Settlements has a component on local government. Part of it is Agenda 21. And so those matters lie in there. So what I wanted to check is how we integrate them in the provision of services and stuff like that. So that's my broad question in that area of service delivery. And my final question to you, sir. You are the one who must explain to us this protest. Because there are claims that they are about service delivery. Is that true? I have finished.
Thank you, sir. Honorable Smith.
Thank you, sir. The free basic electricity story, as he was mentioning it, he corrected it to free basic energy. Of course, if you read the annual report, the figure is free basic electricity, not energy. And that's the question I want to ask. To what extent are we, in fact, is it official policy that we talk about free basic energy or free basic electricity? And if the policy position is, in fact, energy rather than electricity, what level of compliance is there with the energy concept rather than electricity countrywide and look at that rollout? Secondly, what is being done about, in respect to free basic energy electricity, what is being done in respect of the rural areas in particular? I mean, for example, I haven't taken it in. I think we've probably got the lowest rollout of free basic electricity in the country, on average. And I'm not sure, and it's largely a rural problem. How is that issue being addressed if it's not being addressed through the alternative energy way? I mean, how does it ever address the matter of straight electricity in the rural areas, and what's the time frame to deal with it? The decades roll on, and then related to that is this issue of sort of cost versus benefit. I mean, normally when you've got a target of something and you spend towards that target, as you get closer to the target, you're going to spend more and more to get incremental benefits. So if we're talking, for example, of free basic water at 73%, what does it entail from a sort of the resources of the state, or from the, you know, from an effort point perspective, to get that up to 100? What does it take to get the electricity or the energy up to 100? In other words, is the easy part doing 60, and the 40 is going to be the really tough struggle? Same with the water. Getting 73% is fine, but get to 100, is that another major struggle, or is it actually get easier as you get on?
Yeah, Chairperson, while it is appreciated how the department reports, like on slide 4, slide 8, on the achievement, I'm taking you back again to the MIG, Municipal Infrastructure Grant situation. Who is better placed to talk to then the understanding and link it to the good work that the department has come up with on page 222. My worry is that there are so many municipalities that could not spend in this area to make sure that people but on the other side, while they are aware of what the department is doing, but very interesting, the project registration and many other processes. How do you link the two? Yes, the good work. What are the challenges? Because I've even gone through even the treasury documents. This is the area where you seem to have a challenge. You are remedying the situation, but what is worrying if, for instance, ordinary people who come across this report that reflects that their municipalities are understanding, it then means in terms of MSMA, if resources are withdrawn, what about the deliverables? I just wanted any guarantee. The last one is the project management. I just wanted to flag this one. Maybe it might also go that how best can you also extend this training to like where there are projects, because communities that are involved in these areas are usually manipulated by those who secure tenders. You don't leave it with them to train people on how to, because project management is about monitoring the developer or the project as opposed to. How best can the department deploy its resources to assist municipalities directly rather than municipalities rely on the consortium or whoever has one?
Honourable Domen.
Thank you, Chair. Also on the MIG, there was a big improvement for the previous financial year spending now at the end of June. Already 97% was spent. So one really wants to congratulate the department and all the efforts that have been put in on the MIG program. I just want to have clarity again. This was all spent by whom? The department pays out the money, but still monitors the municipalities that haven't paid out and completed all the projects. And I think that links to the disparity that we get. Can you just explain to us what is exactly going on there? Noting that there is definitely an improvement. Secondly, on the indigent registers, the 220 is actually a very good figure. If I'm correct that for the district, the 46 district municipalities, they don't need these registers because they're not frontline providers, or do some of them also have that your total of 220 must actually be out of the whole 283. And then just on the bucket eradication, the national target, I'm worried a bit that we get references these days for free basic services or eradication also, to those who are linked to the system. What is the national target? How does the department see the national target in this regard? Is it the total eradication I just want clarity on that. And then the funding model for ward committees is fully developed. I take it that funding model is for the municipality, how they should implement the ward committee system and make it absolutely viable and taking the new legislation on board. Or what does this funding model entail precisely? Thank you.
Okay.
Oh, thank you once more, Chairman. Yeah, in fact, my question is just an extension of what Honorable Roman has just put in place. I think with regard to the municipal infrastructure grant, my question would be actually on the infrastructure as to whether are we talking of the development or creation of a new infrastructure, or are we, I've heard less of the report talking about the maintenance of the existing infrastructure. So that to me is a concern because somewhere infrastructure is not actually being maintained. And more, I want you to hear more about the creation of a new infrastructure where there is no infrastructure. Because so many people are still waiting for the infrastructure to come so that they can get free basic services. But if infrastructure is not coming, the question is where are those people going to get that infrastructure? Thank you.
Colleague, thank you very much. May I give you, Mr. Patel, an opportunity, please, if you can quickly respond to them so that we can give the other colleagues of the department time.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe I think there were a set of interrelated questions around the municipal infrastructure grant, and maybe I'll try and deal with those quickly. I think the improvement in the spending is also partly related to the fact that we've managed to put proper monitoring systems in place. So with project registration, and that we're able to ensure that we know exactly what projects are being implemented in municipalities. The grant really is it works in a way that it is allocated on a formula basis, and some of the criteria used is the number of backlogs in the municipality, you know, the level of poverty, etc. So the funds are allocated upfront over the MTEF. Municipalities know exactly what they would be getting. But what we do is the transfer is dependent on projects being registered. And part of the criteria around registering projects is to make sure that the projects are in line with the priorities in the municipality's integrated development plan. Now, some of the difficulty with spending is that we transfer on almost a monthly basis to be able to ensure that we can track whether the spending is actually keeping up with what municipalities are saying they're able to spend over the financial year. Now, when we say municipalities are underspending, it's because we're monitoring that situation from a month-to-month basis. And what you do find is that in some months, the spending is slow, but it may pick up in later months. But we've got to track it on a month-to-month basis, because otherwise you run the risk, by the time it comes to the end of the financial year, if you haven't engaged sufficiently with those municipalities, the kind of underspending would be much larger than we currently have. So partly the fact that we've got good monitoring systems is enabling us to manage this on a month-to-month basis, and it's enabling us to track on a case-by-case basis the level of understanding. But that by itself is actually improving the spending overall on the mid-grant. It's a bit of a tricky explanation, but I hope it's clear. We also looking at the project management capacity, because that assisted us with spending. And we do, for instance, with project management, remember the funds are given to municipalities, so municipalities then issue tenders and they procure the services of consultants and contractors. But what we do is we do provide project management support. There are also project management units that are established in municipalities, which are also partly funded through the MIG grant as a capacity building component. But over and above that, we also have national teams that we're putting in place. So for instance, with the public eradication program, we also try and augment that support to municipalities to make sure that on the ground even we have a proper understanding of how the resources have been spent and that we're ensuring that the communities are receiving value for money from the infrastructure spend. There is one of the challenges with MIG is that it doesn't cover maintenance and operations, because the argument is that that maintenance and operations that have to be funded from municipalities' own resources, it can't come from a national capital grant. But we are in ongoing discussions with National Treasury on this to be able to see at least maybe for certain municipalities that have a very low revenue base that we perhaps can look at some way of addressing maintenance and infrastructure and maintenance and operations. There was the question around indigent registers. Basically, local municipalities that are expected to keep these registers. I think what we also will be working with municipalities on is to try and look at populating these registers with more information. It's not just about identifying, putting names of households on a list. Currently, many of these, that's been the first step really with many of these indigent registers. What we want to move now towards is the registers actually give you proper profiles of families living in poverty and what kind of support those families require. That is also coupled with the ward committee capacity building program, so that ward committees as well as community development workers, we get them, you know, begin to assist with this process of the indigent registers and support the indigent households. The funding model for ward committees, we're talking of, I think what we are saying that, first of all, municipalities have to ensure that they can do everything to support ward committees. And we're finding, you know, useful examples where municipalities are actually putting resources and are making sure that ward committees can function effectively. But what we are looking at as well, we think it's important that we look at some kind of national funding that can go into this. And that's the model that we're busy working on. So we're busy putting together some figures and scenarios to say what we think some of the cost implications could be. And we may look at a kind of cost-sharing basis where, you know, we could put something in from national level and municipalities can augment that from their side. I think it would be important to maintain that municipalities have a direct role in supporting ward committees, because you don't want a situation where municipalities, if you get a national grant on this, municipalities then don't play a direct role in actually supporting the ward committee system. So that's what we're trying to work on there. And then I think the issues around free basic energy, we do want to focus more on free basic energy. I think precisely because of the issues around sustainability as well, the chairperson was raising, we're looking at non-grid options and that to basically go for universal access. So when we're talking of free basic energy as well, it's related to the 2013 target for universal access to electricity. And part of the challenges there as well is the bulk infrastructure. So Department of Minerals and Energy is focusing quite a bit now on trying to ensure that we put in place the bulk infrastructure around this and then move towards dealing with connections, because the connections are actually the easier part of electricity. I think the bulk issue is much more difficult. But that is also causing some of the, making it more difficult to reach the target. And if we don't deal with the bulk, then we will be sitting with a bigger challenge. there are examples that we work with certain municipalities, for instance, with Tulamela municipality in Limpopo province. We're running a kind of energy efficient pilot there where we're beginning to look at eventually getting all our households in it onto solar energy. But at the moment already the first phase is street lighting and robots. We've already worked with DME to look at the pilot project to put all the street lights and robots onto solar energy. And then hopefully the next phase is going to move towards looking at households. We're trying to encourage, DME does have a project where households can apply. If you want to install a solar system, you can apply for subsidy. I think the costs are still something we need to look at, but the idea is that we move towards greater energy efficient approaches, and we are looking at we have been engaging with some of the cities as well around some of the energy efficient programs. We do sit as well on the energy forum with the DME and ESCOM, and as part of that process as well, we're trying to look at the sustainability issues from that particular angle. I think also in the context of the whole IDP processes, it's really meant to have been the bedrock for our local approach to sustainable development. And I think much more needs to be done in terms of getting the social, environmental, and economic planning going within municipalities. We're hoping now from the infrastructure side as well, we can begin to strengthen the planning at that level. I do agree, I think it's a critical component and there's much more that we can begin to do there. The last issue, I think probably the most difficult one, which I've left for last, the issue of the protest. I think there is work that we've done to provide reports and do some kind of analysis and on the protest, and I think maybe Elva and DG can also talk a bit more to that issue. But we strongly believe that while there's many different reasons for protests in different parts of the country, many of the protests are related to a lack of proper communication and between the communities and municipalities. And also, if we're able to strengthen the platforms for public participation, like the ward committee systems, and that we believe that we can address some of these protests. We do have cases where people, sometimes communities write to our minister or to the department, indicating that they're having certain grievances and problems, and we do interact with those communities and municipalities directly. So there have been cases where we're able to call the communities, call the municipalities affected together and actually resolve problems before they reach that stage. I think what we're also looking at is perhaps to develop a better early warning and monitoring system from our side so that if we pick these kind of issues up in the system early enough, we're able to play some kind of role. So sometimes there's a number of cases where we're actually training the ward committees, for instance, in the local communities in those areas about the local government system, and we're finding that you build a better understanding and based on that communities are able to respond differently. But there are also issues with the protests, I think, are also related to areas of housing where sometimes these roads and that are compounded with municipalities, and that also I think creates a great deal of a challenge.
Thank you. Quick
that question of reporting, it is also not just at the local level in those areas, it is also with you as well. Because some of the information that countered that perspective about service delivery came from consultancies outside of the department to provide the perspective that says, but relatively this is what happened. I don't know whether if we, for each of those areas, objectively producing information quickly enough in the public arena, we would not make it repository because that information can, in many instances, be found and available somewhere, uncommunicated. Because the general perception is that you listen to anybody who calls themselves a knowledgeable person about things and gets asked to comment. That's what they say. So that, you see, we are confronted with the difficulty of that communication. So both the department itself and those municipalities where that thing happened are guilty of the same thing. Is there, so we need to find a way in which we engage with that issue now, in advance of whatever else may happen in the future, to be able to provide objectively. This is in this area, the housing issue, for example. That thing is explainable, I'm sure. But how do we communicate it speedily, effectively, and so on? The challenge is that we would like to hear you speak on, and so on. Yeah. Maybe the DG later and Elroy can speak to that question of protests. It is a question of concern. We have a view about it, some of us, but we wanted to hear yours on it.
All right. Thank you, sir. And thank you, Mr. Patel. Colleagues, we are of the view then that because of time, we must actually revise the earlier directive. The proposed directive is now that we have already heard to me. We will not question her now. Let us hear the other colleague in this order. In the order in which they appear here, we deal with the administration financial highlights, Mbulele Gaba, and thereafter deal with the administration corporate affairs, Tosi Fala, in that order. And once we hear both of them, then we start with my sister Tumi in terms of questions for clarity. Unfortunately for me, and most unfortunately for the chair, she must just take over. And I can also indicate that I've got somebody who is from, I don't know whether it's from heaven, but I've got a nice holy Bible here. If there's nobody who's claiming it, I'm eager to claim it as mine, but I'll leave it here. So that at the end. No, traditional leaders, I've got Quran, I've got everything. So that when, if they have got any dispute, I can be able to resolve it. Thank you very much, sir.
Guzman, from Calibre. Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, DG and colleagues, I will try and summarize the content of Chapter 3 of the annual report. My outline of the relation will focus mostly on the expenditure trend for the last 5 years, also the financial performance of the department, stressed, and then the audit outcome, and then just the summary of the achievements. In terms of our expenditure trends, our expenditure over the last 5 years has increased at an average annual rate of 39% between 2003 and 2004. And this growth is mainly due to the provision for the local act equitable share and the municipal infrastructure grant to expand the provision of food basic services to poor households. If we look at our expenditure for the current financial year that we are reporting on, which is 2002-2007, there's been a strong growth, which reflects an increase of 54% compared to the previous financial year. This is mainly attributable to the introduction of the regional service country levies replacement grant of 7 billion. This slide reflects these sort of expenditure trends. And if we look at our annual report, page 92 of the annual report reflects these expenditure trends together with the funds that were not spent or underspent. The financial performance of the department, this is just as the program, this is also a summary of a report from the annual report, page 112 to 113. where we also are reflecting some of the shifting and environment of funds. I'm sure the members will recall that when Derek was making his presentation about the budget, he reflected that there was sort of some over expenditure on his budget. But because of the sort of the environment, we do have our section 43 of the PA, Public Finance Management Act. And it's reflected also on the report, on the annual report, the shifting of funds, why we had to shift. We shifted some funds, you know, in those programs where they were reflecting that they were going to understand. And then the financial performance of the department, our expenditure outcome reflects 96.8%. 3.2% of the understanding represent the municipal infrastructure grants that we have already sort of discussed. 18.1 billion was transferred directly to municipalities as equitable share for basic services. This includes the 7 billion that I've mentioned in respect of the regional service levy. 5.9 billion was transferred for investment in infrastructure and job creation. This is an MIG. And the annexure is on pages 174 to 189, which reflects the municipality. And also the 200 million for the municipal system improvement grant, which is reflected the municipality on pages 158 to 173. This is the summary of our sort of expenditure, the economic classification. The members will notice that almost 96% of our budget goes to municipalities in terms of transfers and subsidies to also public entities. And the rest of which is about 3% in respect of current payments and payment for capital assets, which is our admin budget. We've had an over expenditure on our admin budget of 1.1 million, which is reflected in respect of the program. All the funds that we have sort of understand, in other words, we didn't transfer to municipalities. These funds were in respect of municipal infrastructure grant and also the rehabilitation of the infrastructure damages. These funds have been rolled over and were approved by National Treasury, so they will be included in our budget for this current financial year. In respect of the audit outcomes, as a department, we had an unqualified audit report. I think the DG has already alluded to that. There were matters of emphasis that the AG raised. Number one, there were issues around the assets that were less than 5,000. The current accounting framework that is approved by National Treasury requires that we only report on assets in our financial statements, the ones that are more than 5,000, they are interpreted as major assets. So there was the AG is not happy because of the value of these assets. So there are discussions between the Office of the Auditor General together with the Department and the Office of the Accountant General, the Treasury, to address this issue. Our unauthorized expenditure of 1.1 million. We have also requested authorization from National Treasury. The irregular expenditure which was incurred in the previous financial year has not yet been condoned by the State Tender Board. This matter has been forwarded to contract management at National Treasury. I think the members are aware about this issue. This is an issue that is relating to the previous financial year. There were also other matters that the Office of the Auditor General decided that they should also come to our attention. Although they don't have an effect on his opinion, the effectiveness of internal audit, they raise concern about other management not responding on time in some of the queries that are raised by our internal audit. And then our around audit adjustments, this is the result of the unauthorized expenditure that we have incurred of 1.1 million. The Office of the Auditor General, they had a different interpretation in some of the accounts that we were reflecting on our financials, and they requested that we make the necessary adjustments. And some of those adjustments to the financials resulted in us reflecting an unauthorized expenditure of 1.1 million. There are also internal control issues around asset management and information systems. these are issues for NEMS around the barcoding of assets where for NEMS we had duplicate barcodes. So these are issues that we are addressing at the present moment together with the internal audit. They have got a tracking tool of all these findings that were raised by the AG and progress to all the branches. We are reporting to the audit committees on a quarterly basis about the progress on these issues. These are the achievements that we as finance have achieved in this current financial year under review. We do have an unqualified audit report, as I already mentioned. We do have a dedicated asset management unit that is looking at the asset management. We also have an asset control committee that is functional, whereas when we have to dispose assets, this control committee sits down and look at those issues. We had an authorized expenditure of about 66 million, which was reflecting on our financials, which in relating to the previous year, that an authorized expenditure has been approved in terms of the finance act of 2007. When we reflect our financials for this current financial year, an authorized expenditure won't be reflecting our project as it has been authorized. This is just a summary of the highlights that we share. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Honorable Chairperson, honorable member, DJ and colleagues, slide number one, slide number two, nine topics, 13 slides, slide number three, the purpose of the program to provide the management leadership organization within the ministry and the department, slide number four, two strategic objectives. The main one is to strengthen TPS organizational capacity and performance to deliver on this mandate. Next slide, various sub-programs, internal communication, marketing and external communication, human resource management and development, information technology management and administration, achievements of the previous year, where we package the communicated key success stories for project consolidate. We rolled out local government communication strategy and the guidelines. It has been approved by the President's Coordinating Council. Visibility of GPLG increased through the strategic corporate event branding and exhibitions and all the adverts that we put in place. Organizational structure has been aligned with the strategy. Output of job profiles of senior managers. Internship program has been a success. Integrated human resource development strategy has been put in place with the policies. Service delivery plan submitted with the Minister of Public Service and Administration. Employee wellness program through the quality of work life has been implemented. 87% of municipalities connected to local government net and also establishment of local government ICT fora in 8 provinces. And all targeted personnel has been relocated to our new building at 2508 Blue Street and also established a tool for data warehousing which has been completed and the project has been deployed. Over to slide number 9, institutionalized standardized communication policy protocol to convey progress and success. We have strengthened the municipalities through knowledge sharing, enhanced organizational culture and performance as we intend to do. Develop and implement integrated and comprehensive HRMNG strategy to enhance effectiveness and efficiency. We intend to develop a fully integrated ICT system for the entire department and municipalities, ensure efficient and effective use of organizational resources, and improve integrated program management capability within the department. The next slide is the structure and the staffing of the officials of TPLG. As of 31st March, there are 509 posts, 413 has been filled, 96 vacancies. 30th September, 2007, 515 posts, 420 filled, 95 vacancies. Chairperson, I would like to mention that the vacancy rate has been reduced to 19% compared to 23% in the previous year. Out of the total turnover rate of 23% resignations, 15.2% And 15.2% have resigned, and 7.6% is due to transfer to departments, retirement, and natural attrition. So our vacancy rate is greatly improving. The slide on post levels and representativity, I'm just going to touch on the totals of post levels 1 to 12. Females, we had 160 African, 5 color, 2 Asian, 29 white, and with male, 99, 8 colored, 2 Asian, and 9 white. Members of management, as you can see the total below, 28 female, 4 colored, 0 Asian, 8 white, male 42, African 5, Virgin White. Unfortunately, there's a member who's not here who asked me last year, what do I mean by black people? This year, I tried to show him that black people are African, colored, and Asian. At SMS level, GPLG has met all the targets and above them. The public service at GPLG targets is 75. Our position is March of 83, September 80. So we're plus 5%. Women is management, at least we're slightly below the target, 35%, 37% in the month of September. People with disabilities, where we're focusing to have great improvement. On the 30th of September, the profile for people with disabilities was 0.7%, and the employment equity plan and strategy has been placed to address the gap. For the disabled people. The last slide, slide number 13, all the money that was allocated to us was used accordingly, and you promised to do the same with the money allocated to us this financial year. I thank you.
Thank you very much. Because the last time I had to ask you to slow down, you've outdone me. I had no way. Compliments. Questions to monitoring and evaluation? Questions.
Yes, this is my fault. Yes. When we had our strategic review the last year that we had done Seapoint.
Yes.
Is that last year or this year?
Last year.
We had a discussion on this M&E because it seems that there was no government-wide M&E system in place. The department is playing a key role in putting this together.
Yes.
Is that happening? Is that part of the outcome of this whole departmental review?
Okay. That's an interesting question you should have been asked for. This is a qualitatively in terms of the work of the department. This is one of the most crucial ones. An internal monitoring and evaluation system, but also an external monitoring and evaluation of the impact of the work of the team of the department. And so one of the questions I have directly is, when people interact with you, do they get the impression that you guys are doing your work in an integrated manner? In other words, across your areas of responsibility in the department, is this monitoring and evaluation contributing towards such integrity, such integration? Okay? That's the one question I have, because when I have seen ways to that effect of integration, I don't know whether it means what I'm talking about, because that's what I would like to hear. We are picking up vibes that might suggest otherwise. So the so-called silo, are we succeeding to move towards the more integrated approach as a result perhaps of the monitoring and evaluation that shows us the common platforms that we have. You mentioned numbers elsewhere in the provincial department. I think you said four provincial departments of local government don't have those. Which provinces are those? Are there any reasons where these are not happening? And where you have said these units have not been formed with the premier's offices units, you said there were two that didn't have, or one? One. Which one is there? And what are the reasons for that? Again, the compliance and performance issue. Where they do have these units, are they, unlike the, as the lens was saying, is that the, you know, like we used, or Honorable Dikoti, or in any case, it's no longer PAC. We used to say, you see, the PAC is two men and a second. So this unit, too, are they one person and a sex machine in one office, or is it really fully fledged unit that really produces material, and what is their level of authority? In other words, can they make any significant impact in their interaction with whoever they have to interact with? Because it is that qualitative compliance rather than malicious compliance. They want it, we'll give it to Tose, even if he does 101 other things and so on. Is it really qualitatively appropriate stuff that's put into place? Yes, my question, instead of Peter Smith's question, is how far is this being communicated? I've been picking up complete non-knowledge of the existence of this system, as you can see in the meeting here, that is not known. Why are you? that one of the no. I have to say this. In the work that I do with one of your propagandists here, you have produced a very useful little leaflet on communication, for example. I'm going to Palabora here, I've gone to other municipalities, where, in Tula Mela, to use an example used of a municipality, only one person said they know of that, in one municipality, okay? In other words, very good stuff done, but not effectively communicated in some of the municipalities and so on. So and this speaks to the quality of the communication stuff. We used to say that when material is produced, it can't answer questions. It can't answer questions. So when we have done it, then we have to speak to it, to people who are operating around it and so on. So like, just like the government-wide monitoring and evaluation system, which I suppose you are part of, you contributed towards it. Unless there is a way in which people can see it as relevant to their work directly, it's going to stay what it is. You know what I mean? A nice 10 categories, 72 indicators of material that's lying there. So can you speak to those things? Tome?
Chair, I wanted to put it at the end, but perhaps it also fits in here. And that is that the department's record on answering questions isn't good. And I want to put the question, what is the problem? You'll see on the question paper, the green question paper, that in February there's only two questions still outstanding. One is from this department. March are a number. April, right through the year. Now, I monitor the questions on local government very carefully to see what is asked and to, you know, I mean, and I must tell you, the local government doesn't receive that many questions like some of the other departments do. If I take some of my colleagues in my party and my colleague here, they are outperforming us. We don't put that many questions, but there are 70% of my questions this year haven't been answered. And it stands on the record of Parliament. Every week it comes out, and it doesn't reflect good for the department. So I just want, perhaps there is some problem,
But I just want them to look into it and let the department look better on the question paper.
The last question.
For purposes for which this MNE is intended, is it resourced adequately? What I want to know is, what is the missing gap, if there is any? And be frank, don't be diplomatic, you are protected. You promised me, right? She's protected. Yeah. So you have authority, lessons to speak openly. Just the name should be quick one.
Yeah, Jefferson, something very interesting here. On slide 11, have you inculcated a culture of acceptance? You know, in this committee, most entities used to complain in general that when you put systems of monitoring and then evaluation, people take it negatively that you are trying to pin them down. And I'm sure in any administrative arrangement, this is a problem. How do you get the buy-in? Most municipalities would confess that there are so many question papers or formats they have to respond to. They respond to questions more than a process of assessing and affecting their capabilities, so that then they can be able to reflect on the help they want, they would like to have. And I'm saying also, this links up with what is it that you do immediately. Because when you do, for instance, performance appraisal assessment in any situation, immediately you'd identify a deficiency. Even the law forces you that as an employer, you must then be able to capacitate or support. Now I'm saying a balance. Where do we have a balance? But my main worry is the, and I was reading into the high level of takeover deficit in the report, which gave me this, it implies that sometimes when you are a perfectionist, you expect people to perform to a certain given standard. Those who cannot choose to leave. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson and honorable members. The response to the first question, the MNE system for government is based on the government-wide framework. It's a document that guides how each and every department should go about developing their own system. So the intention is not to have one government system at the end. We'll probably have sector systems, like in our case, we are working with DWARF and DME and housing to ensure that the systems that we develop interface and we are able to draw information from each other. But it's still a long way. We haven't reached that level yet, but that's the intention. The integration within DPLG. Chairperson, if you look at our strategic plan, the new one, 2007-2008, we've tried to emphasize the issue around integration by reflecting under each of the deliverables which branch is responsible and which other branches support that branch on the particular issue. So we've grouped branches according to the different outputs that we have developed for the next 5 years, which is different from how we approached the reporting and the undertaking of work in the strategy in the past. It was mainly to emphasize the issue of integration, and members can go back to the strategic plan, they'll notice that we are trying to move away from the silo approach to a much more integrated approach. The provincial departments that have not established the MNE units. The four is KZN, Northern Cape, Northwest, and Mpumalanga. They've all cited financial resources as a constraint that they have not budgeted for this work in the current financial year. And the office of the Premier is Northern Cape. So Northern Cape is both in the DLG and the office of the Premier. But I must say that much as they have not established the units, they've been able to report like any other province. In fact, much better than some of the provinces that have established the units. The level of authority of the units, this work is driven largely from the offices of the Premier, so there is authority. The reports that you receive from provinces are signed off by the provincial DG. In preparing for those reports, they organize planning and reporting meetings with all sector departments within the province. The purpose of the MNE forums in particular is to ensure that all role players participate in the planning and implementation and reporting. So there's general commitment to the work throughout the three spheres. That's one thing that we have achieved in this past financial year. The information that we receive is both qualitative and quantitative. In preparing reports for PCC and MINMEC, we usually develop a statistical report, particularly on the free basic services issues. But we also develop a narrative report and try to analyze the issues that are coming from the different reports for the political principals to consider. We have communicated the system that we are using currently. There's a national MNE forum where all provinces participate, all sector departments and national departments participate. So all the instruments that we introduce, they are usually shared first and foremost with that forum before we take them to provinces for implementation. And then, is the unit adequately resourced? The answer is no, Chairperson. The unit is still fairly new. The department is working hard towards resourcing it, but the problem of resourcing it is much bigger. We have to ensure that provinces are adequately resourced because most of the information that we process comes from provinces, and much as we are weak structurally, the provinces are also very weak, but it's an issue that we discuss with them from time to time. It's an issue that is provided for in the 5-year local government agenda, and we are tracking it. The culture of acceptance of the system, I think it's similar to the response that I gave earlier on, that there's an increasing acceptance of the system and support because we're taking a three-sphere approach. It's not something that we do from GPLG and impose it on people. Any change that we introduce, we work with all representatives from the three spheres in the forum to sell whatever new idea, and any changes that we introduce are usually shared with this forum, and when we receive reports, after processing them through the IGF forum, we go to each and every province to give feedback to the MNE practitioners in particular, and those meetings are attended by the municipal managers, those who are able to attend, but the invite goes to all the municipal managers in a province. We coordinate these provincial meetings with offices of the premiers and departments of local government provincially, so it's a well-accepted process. The challenge is in the implementation and the data management as we proceed, but we are working on that. The question on parliamentary questions, can I request to delegate up? Thanks.
Next one.
Question to the money man. So it's money, who's the guy? And his budget stories. And the limb should.
Yeah, no, thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, now that he has responded to the Auditor General's area, I just want to be clarified on the environment as to, although it has not been covered, I think it's one area that he was supposed to be asked last week, TC, in the joint budget, and say it's one area that is the area of focus. Not that we treat it with suspicion, but to be empowered in terms of, you know, there are terms used like the savings when there are vacancy levels. And it's another language understood by accountants, but it reflects differently to others. But how do you, and then what are the challenges? The other one, I haven't made clear this on this audit committee, whether it's functional. I remember you just, what are the challenges that you are facing regarding the audit committee? I also read that, yes, sometimes there was a concern over the department's response to the challenges they have identified, but it's like you have corrected that one. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. thank you. I needed a clarity on the unconditional grant and why, and what are the reasons why more of the municipalities do not spend it, and what happens to the municipalities who have not spent their allocations, and what the reason that they are saying they don't have used this money, whereby there is a lack of service delivery. For instance, in the Umzinyathi district and the four municipalities under it, they have not yet even spent the money that has been allocated for that thing.
Yes. The expenditure trend, you referred to the introduction of the RSC levy replacement grant at 7 billion. But my question is slightly a different one. What progress is being made to replace the replaced RSC levy? Are you guys reaching any destination with an appropriate formula to replace it? In the State of the Cities report, the writers of that report, their latest report, the South African Cities Network, one of the risks they talk about in local government relates to this one. In fact, the argument is that some of the metros has taken quite a hit, and that the replacement resources come nowhere near making up for the default. So this is why I'm partly asking whether you are making any progress with replacing it with an appropriate formula, and or what's going to happen in the medium to long term around that question. Yeah, okay, let's stop there. Yes, 1.5 what?
Chairperson, thank you very much. Just a clarity for ignorance sake. Whether shifting of funds within, I would say, programs or responsibilities is legal. If you can just explain on that one. And the other one is that, I was looking at the annual report, where it states that there's a 3.2% underspending, and I was trying to relate this to the presentation a shift of funds, and I was just confused. I thought I needed to be educated on that one. Thanks.
Yeah, we're still on the finance. We'll move to the next one. You okay? All right. Let's get some quick responses. Do you want to respond? Or you want to defer, delegate upwards as well?
No, yesterday, I thought the DG wanted to comment. So,
DG, but you're being unfair. Hang on. Why don't you become consistent? You bank it as well. Is that okay? You bank it as well.
Is the DG?
No, that's fine. That's fine.
Is the DG responding only on finances?
No. She's going
back. I've got a question for the DG, but I thought we were finishing these reports first. Because it's more corporate.
It's never any simple here. Okay. Yeah, the domain is really. Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
Your Chair, you've asked for consistency, and I think that we are consistent in trying to answer the questions posed to us, and we are distributing how we answer them. And when we started off, when we were dealing with the urban and rural development program, there were questions that were posed to the branches as well as to the department, and it was important for me to answer
when I decide
which questions I want to answer, which are posed to the department as a whole, I think that I should be given an opportunity to do so. And I'm going to do that now.
Go ahead.
With regard to the question that's being asked about the expenditure trend and the implications of changes with regard to the regional services council level. There are discussions that are being held between our department and the National Treasury together with SAGA. And the last of these discussions included the MECs of the provincial treasury. The discussion paper points to the recent lessons with regard to this area and makes recommendations that we need to do further work. But the current transitional approach to the issue is that the equitable share has been increased to seek to cover for the gap, the current gap. And there's further work that must be undertaken. That was the proposal that was accepted. Secondly, there is a matter that we also raised with regard to that structure, the development element of the equitable share, where we were saying that it might be useful, especially as a DPLC, that we look at a window that will allow us to recognize that some of the districts, but also the local municipalities in the rural areas, the undercapacitated ones, need to be considered in a fiscal regime that recognizes their base, the low level base. So that is an issue that and we are undertaking work in that regard. With regard to the conditional grants, Madam Bengu asked about the why we have them as conditional grants and why are we seeing those patterns. What we have reported upon here is that we now have annexures where at the end of our financial year as the DPSC in March, not in June, but in March, we have now started to report out of all of those municipalities that have received, that we have allocated this grant, that have not spent the funding as allocated. For as we have indicated in this schedule, we then trace how we have followed up with these municipalities. Some of them, especially with regard to the MIG, you'll find that in the MIG, previously they received the funds as a district, but we then proposed that the locals should also receive the direct funding because it took time for the district to do that. That was a situation where some of the local municipalities were for the first time receiving these funds. And we have been following that up. With the system, the municipal, the system capacity grant, the grant that deals with system, that has been a very difficult grant to manage, I must concede. It is a grant that is focused on system development. It is 200 million a year over a period of 3 years. Why I'm conceding that is because we have consciously asked municipalities to present business plans before they can receive the grant and spend on it. And that business process of requesting business plans, of not just spending off, requesting business plans, and after municipalities have submitted business plans, they have to periodically report on the basis of those business plans. And some of the municipalities do not have the capacity to report periodically. And that has been the challenge, especially for those municipalities which have for the first time now started to receive these reports. We have disclosed this problem in the list of the challenges in this annexure. Then, of course, we made follow-up by the end of a municipal financial year in June. We find that sometimes there's been some improvement because of those follow-ups. And with regard to the internal environment, the environment process the CFO referred to, the process that we followed for this year was according to law. Internally, in terms of the operational budget, where in certain items there's been a need for us to focus during the financial year on a particular matter, we are allowed as in an operation of an organization, we are allowed, but within a certain limit and according to treasury regulations, we are allowed to refocus certain amounts of the budget towards those priorities that have been identified. So we have done that within the law, but we can go on and explain why we have done that. Now, the last point which Honourable Member said we must talk to is the point where we decided this year that because we wanted to ensure that we improve this accountability measure, even with regard to municipal infrastructure, we had to work with certain municipalities which were not prepared in terms of their capacity to receive the MIG funding. Instead of using the term dumping the funds to municipalities, we tried to make sure that we can mobilize the experts, mobilize whatever support they need, and send it to these municipalities, work with them, instead of just spending the funds. So we kept those funds according to regulations of National Treasury. And that was approved by National Treasury. That is the amount that is reflecting underspending. So we decided, if you look at page 92 of our report, and I do want to talk about the underspending and the patterns, because I think that the department has managed up to the year that we are reporting to come to grips with the challenge of underspending. And we know what interventions are needed from an operational budget perspective, and we know what interventions are required from a transfer budget. So instead of just spending those funds and not looking at what is happening there, we are now bringing discipline throughout the system for us to work on that, so to be able to intervene there. So in page 92 of the annual report, for example, we trace how we have done this over the 5 years. In the first financial year, if you look there, we had a budget of about 4 billion rand. And The worry we had at the time was that the saving or the amount that was left in the coffers of the department was 84 million. Although this amount seemed not significant to other people, but for us it was significant. It was a 1.7 saving, but it was significant. So we decided that we were going to focus on this, managing the amount that is left at the end of the financial year. So that is how we have traced. If you look at 2002 and 2003, although our budget has increased to 6 billion, we tried significantly to reduce the savings component of that throughout these years. But we could have in 2005 and 6, when we had the budget of 15 billion, and we were at a point now where we only saved 2.8 million. So it was clear that the department had a system to manage the finances. But when then we decided that let us focus on these grants, the conditional grants. So we had a 24 billion budget, and we decided that we are going to keep the amount of 817 for the for this purpose that I referred to. And Treasury has now agreed that we transferred. There was a rollover, and those funds are now available to the municipalities. We've increased the capacity for those municipalities to implement. The challenge we have indicated in the system to those municipalities is that our people are not waiting for processes. They are actually, they are voted funds, and those funds must be spent on the year when they were allocated. So it is going to be important that we improve these processes. This is not good news, but we have done something about it, and we had to bring in some discipline within that system. The last point I want to mention is a point raised by the CFO about the in the operational budget. He indicated that in the operational budget there was an amount which, due to the financial accounting process, was recorded as unauthorized, and it is on slide number 11. We have disclosed this because for us it is important that we explain that that amount was concerned and a part of our operational budget for traveling expenditure and related expenses, where we actually have to, in our financial statement, we must close off the financial statement and every month. We must do clear our substance account, and we have done that for each month, financially speaking. So Mr. Shudulu was asking the honorable member that we must explain these differences and how the statements are. So we've done the clearing of this financial, this substance account for 12 months. And for the 13th month, which was the first year of the financial year, we in our statement, we cleared the 13th month in the following year. And we were then advised by the auditor that even if it was 13 months, we should have cleared even that month in the same financial year. So we had a long discussion and debate between National Treasury, the auditors, and ourselves on how, in accounting terms, we should have treated that amount. That amount, anyway, was still available in the budget, and that is how then we have started. It's the first time we are recording that kind of a transaction in this way. So that is how we have sought to address that. Can I call to allow the CFO to talk to some of the points that have been raised? I know that the Honorable Mshuduli referred to the Audit Committee and the Internal Audit Committee. He said the Internal Audit. The Audit Committee is the external committee which is functioning and functioning well, and it has reported the full statement from the audit committee. It is functioning well. What the external auditors are concerned about, and we agree with them, is that the internal audit unit that we have established in our department is not functioning at its optimum level. When we started off, we had an internal audit that was headed by a deputy director. In the past years, we have increased the capacity of that internal audit. It is now led by an internal audit executive at chief director level. We have increased the people who work there, and the Auditor General was able to rely on what has been done by internal audit. But his complaint, and we agree with it, was that tracking the work of the internal auditor, he found that when they submitted response to management, the time it took for individual senior managers to respond to the questions that our internal auditors have raised was long. And this affected the quality of the work that they have done. And we have now sought to try and seek to address that problem within our department. Thank you.
Okay. That was my question, in fact, about how you're dealing with the turnover concern that they are raising. That's a very crucial one. A quick one, Daniel.
Quick one, yeah. I was just going, as you were speaking, JP, as you were responding to the question that I posed, a follow-up would do from me would be, is your explanation confirming the view of the AG that you take too long to respond to audit reports?
My explanation is confirming that the AG is concerned with instances where the internal auditors have raised concerns within the department and the time it has taken, although these responses were responded with, these questions were responded to, but the time takes for management to respond, and we concede that we can improve on the time in those instances. It's not a general process, but in those instances we can improve.
Okay. All right. Gigi, just a last this answer, or before you respond, Chief. Before you respond, if there's anything you still want to respond to, there might well be yes. The red slide number 9, the municipalities that were frequent non-spenders, would those be broadly among those that are subject to project consolidate support and so on? Would they fall among those? And what is the explanation for their persistent non-performance? The final thing, DG, we just came back from O.R. Tambo, the district, and they moaned a lot that now that they are ready to spend, they've got systems to be able to spend. You are taking long to bring back that money you took away from them. So, please respond to that. They would like to hear good news, no doubt about that. Yes, yes. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I think the DG has covered most of the issues that the committee members have raised. I think in addressing what you have just raised about the opponents who are Tambo saying the funds that were taken from them have not been transferred. Since we've got the approval now, our branch, that is the Free Basic Services Program Management Unit, they've been visiting the program to advise them about the fact that funds have been made available. But we have never sort of stopped them, because normally before we can apply for rollover, we have to ensure that the funds are already committed. So we know that most of the funds for the coming financial year are already committed. So even if municipalities do not spend, we do emphasize to Treasury that these funds are already committed, so we don't actually stop them. But there's always that uncertainty that if it's not approved, you know, then they've already spent. But we are communicating with the municipalities to go ahead with the project.
Yeah, okay. It would be useful to get to hear where they stand in terms of what you're saying. Yes, you.
Just to add to that, I think very important just to put into perspective, especially on the MIG grant,
yeah.
That the grant was introduced in 2004-05 financial year, earlier than it was meant to, because we were only going to introduce it later, but we said, remember first we had the previous grant, tried to consolidate all the different infrastructure grants, and we brought forward the introduction of MIG as a consolidated grant. So we brought it forward in the 2004 financial year. It wasn't given to all municipalities, it was only given to a few municipalities. In the following year, we gave it out to more municipalities who we felt would have the capacity. And then last year, that's the year under which we were looking at this report, our annual report, was the first financial year where it was actually gone to every municipality in the country. So in terms of that, we also, the first time we signed many municipalities to get the systems in place, and we also had to test the kind of capability in some of the municipalities to be able to spend, even though, you know, at the first assessment we thought that some of the spending capability was in place. But the idea, the issue as well is that we have got national support measures now as well to make sure that with better planning together with the municipalities, we'll be able to ensure that in this financial year and in the coming financial years, we're able to fast track spending.
Just one question, I don't understand. Slide 9, we're talking about corporate services, which I always thought was an internal exercise. It's within the department. But the second bullet on slide 9 talks about one of your strategic priorities to strengthen municipalities through knowledge sharing and learning across municipalities and government. How is that corporate services? I would have thought that's capacity building or some other branch. What does it mean here?
Thank you very much. You will remember that we've got what we call local government communication system. And that is the question that was asked by the chairperson, what are we doing to make sure that all those results are being communicated to the people? Now, there's a tripartite alliance between SALGA, CIS, and the DPLG, working together on the rollout of the local government communication system. And we are doing that with all the provincial communicators. You'll find that with the provinces and also with the municipalities, there's a great lack of communication. All the things that are being done are not being communicated to the people. The communities out there, they will not be the successes of the government. So we go out to strengthen municipalities through knowledge sharing and learning across municipalities and government. I'm sure you'll agree with me that some of the I might not dwell to this. Some of the protests are because of ignorance of people not knowing what the government is doing for them. So that is what we are busy with them, through the knowledge sharing and inform them what you are doing as a parliamentarian.
Yeah.
Oh yes, yeah. In course I'll put it better, but it's fine.
Hi, Gizun. Gizunalela must think familiar because it's called so that I must translate it in my own language. just a quick one. Yeah. He's an agitator, he's a civic agitator. He would pick those things up very quickly. That's why he picks it up, yeah. Yeah. It was the ICT and its uptake inside the department. You know, people have computers, but most often use their typewriters, or a certain class of official get to have a computer system. What is the situation in the department? It speaks to the question of monitoring and evaluation and the speed with which we can communicate across the board. So that's the one that I have been suggesting to do that quickly.
Thank you very much. You know, in one of our buildings called Pancadia 2, we've got a dedicated room, training center, on computer, that people, all of them can be computer literate. But you will find that people are reluctant to go and be trained. They always think that they can work on computer. But we do gradually take people from time to time on various sessions so that they can be trained. Our ICT unit have got dedicated people who are trained on how to train other people. So that's why we've got that center.
We need a very specific. I don't understand why the people must, when the whole department uses that system for communicating. You say others, it's okay if they still operate using pigeons to send messages. And you're quite okay about it. If I still want to nurse my phobia, that's fine. Don't do anything about it. Because part of the effectiveness of communication and doing that work more effective is when everybody uses the system. So really, it shouldn't be a choice that people can have whether to do it or not. Members, this is the last of the questions, areas that we have questioned, that we have had questions. So is there any other comment someone wants to make with you?
Since you got so lightly off, I'm in the reports, the consultants, I mean, you have to hire people, but event manager for the briefing session with counselors, three people that were hired to work 7 days for such an event, and I saw it somewhere else also. So let me just ask, are you trying to keep the cost down? I got an events manager for the mayor's conference with national and provincial government. 5 consult people working 20 days for an event. Is that really necessary?
You see, this is the annual report, so we couldn't give all the details of a very wide up. And I think if you did attend that big event, a lot of effort went to it. There's a lot on the background than what you see on the day of the event. And we can't really go into detail to say this person is there, but because trying to show our honesty and our reliability, we want to write it on the annual report. But as I'm saying it to you now, is there a question of that, you know, you could only take 5 people to, remember that 23 municipalities, 9 provinces, and want all of them to come under one roof, and they're using, you know, that opportunity so effectively, such that the bulk of information that you give to them. You remember that with the one of this year, we even had videos, you know. But and then those videos were countrywide. Now you can imagine how many people went there just to bring that in. But the impact that it has after that to all the people, you know, that's what we're looking for.
DG, I want to say a couple of things quickly. We in our interaction with the National House of Traditional Leaders, we requested Professor Sobahle, I thought I should do it formally in this meeting. We requested Professor Sobahle to coordinate a seminar that will include, and oddly enough, we didn't mention the National House of Traditional Leaders, okay, with MGDA, the Media Diversity Development Agency, the SABC, PENSAP, the CRL Commission, and we must include the Department of Arts and Culture. There might well be others that we are not mentioning, but who deal with questions of the promotion of multilingualism, language-related issues. All of those have something to deal with it. and they've been challenged directly either by the president or it's in their mandate to handle those issues of language and so on. And there isn't an integration. We are raising it because you are responsible for promoting integration and coordination in government. So there's an opportunity there to multiply the impact of all of them in that area of language and language use and promotion and so on. So I thought that we should raise this, that we would like to see that as an important part of the work that we do. I thought I should mention that. The second one is what we were discussing here. We are really concerned, although you say this is not your principal responsibility, but this conundrum of land use and development planning related stuff is a concern of us. It affects all of government, by the way, and that all of that stuff hits the ground in local government. So we should be the ones who are most concerned and should put up the most pressure. So we would request you at the technical level in your enforcement to try and kick back to have some movement around this issue. I don't know what size shoe you wear, but we frankly are eager to get this thing moving on. So please give us some report as soon as that is possible. The question of local economic development and originals in the case that Nelly was talking on and so on, I don't think it should be an either-or issue. I think in both, that you can't have an LEP that is unrelated to the regional economic development stuff. But there are specific things that can only happen inside that municipality and not anywhere else in the region. But that we should seek linkages, express linkages with the regional, the broader economies and so on. Otherwise, we are proposing delinking that has long been rejected theoretically in the field of development. So that issue is an important one. Especially because what we often do not get and pick up is that effective intermunicipal collaboration around those issues, for example. Sometimes it doesn't need all of them, just two or three of them, because they've got a common ground for doing that. And we don't leave those out for reporting as well to show best practice of municipalities acting together for economic purposes, three or four of them inside a district, for example, or even across districts. Or even across provinces for that matter. Because we're treating these boundaries as concrete and unpermeable. And this promotes a very untenable problematic parochialism. So proactively from where you guys are sitting, in the interest of promoting integration and so on, we should seek out these opportunities for working across these boundaries and so on, so that we can see that in practice. Maybe in the reporting next time, the question that Peter asked about the work that we do with provinces, that we need a more systematic reporting on issues of provinces and so on, the state of health of provinces and their capacity to do their work, but also issues of coordination and integration. So maybe that should be an area that you look at to find how best, for purposes of reporting to the work that you are doing in a way that we can see very clearly in your report. So maybe in the next 3 months or so, you can give us an outline of elements of that so that we can talk about it here. Those are my last comments for now. I'm sure members after this meeting will have an opportunity to reflect on what happened today and in the report. And if there are any questions that you want to raise to the DG and the department, you will do so. Peter already has one.
One thing that remember we had our budget speech with the Parliament.
Yes.
DG said that the department will come back to us on the input.
Yes.
Now, of course, this is not the appropriate forum now, but there is an overlap because some of the issues we raised are a function of what you're doing in terms of your annual report and so on.
Yes.
Is there some way of linking those issues as well at some stage so we don't just fall off the radar completely?
That's important. Xavi is sitting there. He took profuse notes about that matter, that the department would come back to us on those issues that we had raised in the budget debate and so on, because we felt like the comment you made, Derek was making earlier on about the issues raised in meetings here, but also in the budget debate, people raised issues there that we should come back to us and talk about them and so on. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your patience. I'm sure we had a very fruitful discussion and debate. Whatever Dongan would like to say, we'll say after the meeting is adjourned. Thank you. Oh, okay. No, I must allow you to answer that one. Sorry. I think that's okay. Just respond to you quickly. Prefer to do it now? Yeah, okay. It's not your question anymore. You shouldn't have asked it here. If you ask here, it's no longer yours. Okay?
Thank you, Chair. No, I just want to acknowledge the, even the last point that has been made. Yes, we would like to have set a session where we take into consideration the points that have been made by the Honourable Members. It's really very fruitful for us to be able to consider those. It's a pity that we are not able to come back and show you how actually we use the points you raised and seriously go through them rigorously and see whether they are covered. The parliamentary questions, all I wanted to say, Honourable Chair, noting that we are discussing the annual report, but noting that this is an important issue that the Honourable Member has raised, to say that we really are committed to respond to parliamentary questions, and we value, you know, the role of the legislative arm of government. So we really are committed to that. We would like to ask, and I don't know whether the Honourable Government is not aware of this. We have tried to work with Parliament in so that the Parliament and the committee can appreciate our situation. For instance, we have received 73 questions this year. We have answered most of these questions, 44 of them, in terms of the detail. But there are certain questions, and that's why I'm saying it's just a matter of principle to agree that we will do that. But there are certain questions just on the principle of relevance that are posed to us that really do not belong to us. I want to read for you one small one, you know. Whether, this is the question, whether a formal security plan has been complied for the Free State Provincial Government to ensure the systematic implementation of security installations. If not, why not? When was the plan compiled? When was it approved? What was the cost of implementing the plan? During the period, tell me, during this period, from 1994 to 2006, how many contractors were appointed? These are the kinds of questions. Now, when this goes to the leader of government business, goes to, you know, the different structures within the legislative arm and even the executive arm, you get a list of numbers of questions. Sometimes people don't get an appreciation of what the questions are. Sometimes that is one thing, but there are questions that are relevant. But sometimes the level of detail that is required from a central department, with a system that we have where we've got provincial legislators, is really not always fair. And in certain instances, this is the last example I will make. In each of the last three years, for which information is available, how many councillors were fired? B, what are the names of these councillors? C, what municipality did each of them work for? Now, work for, but we'll try and answer. 4, what offense did each of them commit? Whether action has been taken against certain councillors? If not, why not? Etc., etc. For all of these years, not for the past financial year, for 3 years. So we are just wanting to confirm that in principle we want to work and make sure that we are accountable, and where we can we will try and do this. But we ask for your understanding as we try to clear that slate. Once again, Chair, thank you very, very much. And let me say, because the honourable member raised it, when we are invited to come to Parliament, we are also committing again. We will always come. And when we are not able to come, all of us in this group, we'll always seek to get our members of the department to come. Last week, the honourable member was indicating to me that we were expected at a certain level, but we were at the same day, you know, making presentations in the government and administration cluster. So we are appreciating that this committee does consult with us so that we can find an appropriate date and we can explain, you know, that we would like to come on a particular date, and we appreciate the fact that the sector does make this follow-up.
Professor Mbeki would say on the last question in terms of business, let me give you a doctorate for which you must pay 50 or 100,000 or something. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much.